Good morning. Turn in your Bibles to Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Ecclesiastes chapter 1. I'm going to read the first two chapters here and make some comments. But I'm not going to do a lot of commenting to start with here. Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 1. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? One generation passes away, and another generation comes, but the earth abideth forever. The sun also ariseth, and the sun goeth down, and hasteth to his place where he arose. The wind goeth toward the south, and whirleth about unto the north. It whirleth about continually, and the wind returneth again according to his circuits. All the rivers run into their sea, yet the sea is not full. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. All things are full of labor, man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. The thing that hath been is that which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done. And there is no new thing under the sun. Is there anything whereof it may be said, see, this is new. It hath been of old time, which was before us. There is no remembrance of any of former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of things that are to come with those that shall come after. I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I gave my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. This sore travail hath God given to the sons of men to be exercised therewith. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. That which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. I commune with mine own heart, saying, lo, I am come to great estate. I have gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge, and I gave my heart to know wisdom, to know madness and folly. I perceived that all that this also is vexation of spirit. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increases knowledge increaseth sorrow. I said in mine heart, go to now, I will prove thee with mirth, therefore enjoy pleasure. And behold, this also is vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it? I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting mine heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was that good for the sons of men, which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life. I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards, and I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruits. I made me pools of water to water therewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. I got me servants and maidens, and had servants born in my house. Also I had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I gathered me also silver and gold and the peculiar treasures of kings and of provinces. I got me men singers and women singers and the lights of the sons of men as musical instruments, and that of all sorts. So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me, and whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was the portion of all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. And I turned myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do that cometh after the king, even that which hath been already done? Then I saw that wisdom excelleth folly as far as light excelleth dark. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walketh in darkness, and I myself perceived that one event happeneth to them all. Then I said in mine heart, as it happeneth to the fool, so it happeneth even to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart that this also is vanity. For there is no remembrance of the wise more than of the fool forever, seeing that which now is in the days to come shall all be forgotten. And how dieth the wise man? As the fool. Therefore I hated life, because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity and vexation of spirit. Yea, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that should be after me. And who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? Yet he shall have rule over all my labor, wherein I have labored, and wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun. Ah, this also is vanity. Therefore I went about to cause my heart to despair of all the labor which I took under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is in wisdom and in knowledge and in equity. Yet to a man that hath not labored therein shall he leave it for his portion. This also is vanity and a great evil. For what hath the man of all his labor and of the vexation of his heart wherein he hath labored under the sun? For all his days are sorrows and his travail grief, yet his heart taketh not rest in the night. This also is vanity. There is nothing better for a man than he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw that was from the gift, that this was from the hand of God. For who can eat, or who else can hasten thereunto more than I? For God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge and joy, but to the sinner he giveth travail to gather up and heap up, that he may give to him that is good before God. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit. All right, so when I said let's turn to Ecclesiastes, you probably weren't thinking of an inspirational and fun time, all right? And it's not, all right? This is a meat and potatoes. This is a foundation-building sermon, okay? But I'm excited this morning to read from Ecclesiastes because I have questions. And some of us think like Solomon. What's really going on with life? What's really at the bottom of all this? And Solomon had the power, the knowledge, the wisdom, and the money to find out. He ran an experiment that you and I cannot afford to run. We do not have it. And he came back from that experiment saying, it's all garbage. It's not worth it. Now, he twisted at the end. See, Ecclesiastes is a tough thing. Because it's hard to know how to take some of his stuff. A couple reasons for that. One is, he's apparently somewhat of a melancholy, and not all of us are, okay? And so that's difficult. But it's depressing. When you come to the Bible for inspiration, for I was a tree by the riverside, and I drink the river of life, and I'm growing and every day. That's not this story here. So why is it included in the Bible even? I mean, like Alvin Jones would say, I came here to find out how to go to heaven. How does this help? Okay. And this is a question, okay? Is there joy in Ecclesiastes? I mean, precious little joy. Very little. And it's so random. First we have depressing stuff and a little bit of joy, and then a bunch more depressing stuff and a little bit of joy, and it's confusing, and the conclusion is kind of anticlimactic. Now, this is wisdom literature, okay? So it's not a story that you can just like, or a full thought. Now, the first two chapters are pretty coherent, but that's not how wisdom literature works. All right, this is a way of relating wisdom. It's more like eating popcorn. All right, this one thought, this one thought, this one thought. Okay, it's not all this, it's not all one coherent thing, but the themes are pretty strong. Okay, so I'm going to draw a diagram up here. When you're a baby, and none of us remember this, but babies do not make connections, all right? When you are a baby, all you think that is happening is chaos. It is really hard to understand what's happening as a baby. When you come out of the womb, and babies don't make connections. When they're hungry, they cry. When they need change, they cry. And they just cry, okay? They smile a little bit here and there. It's chaotic. Now, they don't realize that there's people behind the scenes making connections for them. Their parents are like, oh, they're crying. Well, it's got to be one of four things, all right? And most of the time it is, or three. Anyhow, when you're tired, you can't figure it out. All right. So the baby grows up, and the baby becomes a young person, and in a good home, that young person they're making connections. They see order. The parents teach order to their children. This is not chaotic. You did not just get a spanking because we hate you. You got a spanking because you did the wrong thing. I told you to do one thing, you did another. Or you did not do anything. All right? So as a young person, and then we tell them, see, the baby's crying, the baby is hungry. Sometimes the children actually make a connection. Mom, Dad, the baby's crying, they need that. Oh yeah, I guess they did. All right, so then, I would say there's another level. And this is the level of an adult. And it's chaos. All right? And this is where Ecclesiastes is, a lot. Okay? Things happen in our lives that do not make sense. I don't understand how, what happened to my order. I had a plan for my life. I had an anchor for where I was going to go. And things have happened to me that I do not understand. And this is not working out the way I thought it would. All right? So the adult has chaos. And there's nobody to pull them out. There's no adult behind them except God himself. But the baby has chaos, but he doesn't actually have chaos. He thinks he has chaos, but he doesn't. The young person learns order. The adult has chaos. The young person has chaos. And he has questions. Real questions. And then the adult has order. Okay? So that's the progression. This is really simplified, okay? This is really simplified. But this is what you're seeing in Ecclesiastes. You're seeing kind of the last two bands of what's going on here. And it ends up with order. But there's a lot of chaos in the middle, and legitimate chaos. Sometimes things that you thought were going to happen as a young person, things you projected that were going to happen, they don't happen. As I saw a post recently, nobody is as confident as a teenage daughter telling her mom what to do as how to do something she's never done. And as a young man, that was me too. Like, I don't know what I thought as a teenager telling my dad how to do things. Like, I never did it before. How would I have a qualification for that, all right? But as a young person, you've got ideas, or as a young adult, and even as an older adult sometimes. But it doesn't always work out the way you think. And then what do you do? How do you process this? How do you process this? So why is Ecclesiastes in the Bible? We look at what he did. And, I mean, he starts off with just, he looks at the natural world and is like, what's going on? Nothing progresses. Nothing changes. There's this one giant circular pattern. It is amazing to watch the waters run to the sea. This is a lot of power. A lot of things happening. But what's actually going on? And we're always reinventing the wheel, you know? Tony Hyde accused me of that. But we already have a wheel, all right? It's round, it has spokes on it, or something in the middle that turns. Very, very important piece of equipment. And there's lots of things like that. And we keep forgetting that we have wheels and reinventing them and thinking it's great. And Solomon's like, this is so tough. Why? We're not getting anywhere. So if you learn something really, really important and you put it on a website and you tell everybody what you found out, that should make it for posterity, right? Anybody in the whole world can read it. What actually happens? The website goes out of date, gets delisted from Google, you forget to pay the bill. If it was a free website, they'd quit doing the free thing. Right? It's just gone. All right? You write a book, nobody reads it. Gets lost, you die, nobody cares. All right? Is that hard for me to hear as a guy who likes to learn things? It's kind of hard to hear. It's true, though. The older I get, the more I'm like, man, there's so much to learn. There's so much that's been written, and we've lost a lot of it. So many wise people spend a lot of time trying to figure things out. So I have turned to farming and homesteading and gardening. We should learn much about that kind of thing. What did Solomon do? Same thing. He says, I planted me vineyards, I made me gardens and orchards, and I planted trees. I like trees. Trees are permaculture. Trees don't have to be replanted every year. You get fruit every time. It's wonderful. That's not the answer, folks. Maybe I should do animals. All right? No, he had great possessions of great and small cattle. He had goats and sheep and cows and oxen. It's not where it's at. All right? And technology, wisdom. We have so much to push into. What's the problem here? The problem is we're trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. It don't fit. God, these are the useful things that God gives us. But this is what needs filled, and that's actually our hunger for God Himself. All right? Useful things don't fit into that round hole. And Solomon says, I tried and I tried and I tried. And we can try hard and push so much, and we won't get there. I have another passage here I'd like to talk about. Talking about Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 7. Let's go to that one. Now this is a little bit out of band, maybe, or not quite in order. But Ecclesiastes has these things. He has these useful and nice things. And what I did not understand was, how does he advocate useful and nice things and experiences when he also talks about the vanity of them? How does that, why does he say, I tried getting mirth, I tried lots of women, I tried lots of wealth, I tried all this stuff, and it was all junk. And then he says, but here, you should try this. Verse 7. Go thy way, eat thy bread with joy, and drink thy wine with a merry heart, for God now accepteth thy works. Let thy garments be always white, and let thy head lack no ointment. Live joyfully with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity, which he hath given thee under the sun, all the days of thy vanity. For that is the portion of this life, and in thy labor which thou takest under the sun. Whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with thy might, for there is no work, nor device, nor knowledge, nor wisdom in the grave whither thou goest. Now, huh? He just said, it doesn't matter. It's all vanity. It doesn't matter at all. Why is he advocating the simple pleasures of life? So why do we work? Why do we sacrifice? Why do we toil? Why do we stay up late at night and get up early in the morning? And why do we push for things? We have to be careful that we don't get off on the wrong track. And the wrong track is that we are pushing for a square experience or asset to go into a round hole.
Now, we also have square holes in our life, all right? These are the normal things of life. Those fit here, okay? And he's explaining that, yeah, there's no problem with that. In fact, we should take these useful and nice things and plug them right into that hole, all right? But they do not take the place of God himself. We cannot walk away from the fear of God. Now, what's the translation layer? How do we get the useful and nice things? Does anybody know how that works? I found this out recently. I wanted land, and I realized I have to make a lot of money to buy land. Who would ever thought? Anyhow, that's been missing my brain for a long, long time, and now finally I realized that. And I would say that money gets you nice things, which should go here, but sometimes go here. Okay? So money gets you nice and useful things, and then what do you do with them? Do with it. Some people get stuck here. If I have a little bit of money and I can have a few nice things, maybe I should really work hard and get a lot of money. Then I can have a lot of nice things. If you read all of Ecclesiastes, you will find out that doesn't translate into being a happier person. Okay? This is not the answer. Lots and lots of money takes lots and lots of sacrifice, which does not mean lots and lots of happiness. You would think it would, but it doesn't. Okay? The point of money is to have enough things, but we still are missing the fear of God, and that can be a problem.
I have an article that I popped up in my mind when I was thinking about this, and I looked it up. And if you'll excuse me, this is taken from the Small Farmer's Journal. It was by David Bluffum, originally published in the Atlantic Monthly, copyright 1910. Taken from an article called The Poor Man's Farm, which I thoroughly enjoy, and most of you probably don't care. But anyhow, he talks about a farmer that lives kind of by his means and enjoys what he's producing. Is lots of eggs, lots of meat, lots of cheese, lots of cream, and eats well and enjoys his life. He's fit, he's healthy because he has to do a lot of hard work, and he's his own boss. And I think paints a fairly accurate picture in 1910 of that kind of success. However, he's talking to people who are not farmers in 1910, who live in the city and wish to be farmers, and he's pointing out a problematic situation, and I think Ecclesiastes is pointing out the same problem. So this is a different picture of the same theme. For purely financial success, and considered apart from the advantages in living, one must look to, for examples, to the larger agricultural enterprises in which the primary function of agriculture, the means of support, is a less essential part. But money has been made, too, on the ordinary small farm, and there are men who, from a business where no one would suppose there could ever be much income above the necessary cost of living, have accumulated considerable sums. I am in no despiser of money, but I would advise no young men to seek it by this road. The cost is too fearfully high. The dollars are paid for in the very stuff of which life is made. But as no presentation of the poor man's farm is fair without showing its every side, let us take a glance at the life of a man who has made money on one of these small farms and see if it compares favorably with the pictures already drawn. I need cite no special case, for unfortunately, he represents a class, and his prototype can be found living in every country town in the older states. He lives in a two-story house facing and quite near the road, and the front window blinds are always closed. The place is neither cheerful nor inviting, but there's a certain thrifty look about it, not exactly a look of neatness, but an indescribable suggestion of forehandedness, which I don't understand that. The farmer himself is getting old. He is weather-beaten, wrinkled, and a trifle stiff in the joints, but still able to work, and he does work. Early and late, he has worked hard all his life, nor is he the only one on his farm who has done this. He has seen to it that his wife, his sons, and his daughters have all done the same thing. But if he has been a merciless taskmaster, let us also give him credit at least for this, that he himself has set the pace and kept the lead. He has been frugal, too, and as well as industrious. Though he keeps cows, Cream is a rarity on his table. And with plenty of eggs in his storeroom, very few are ever used at home. He never thinks of dressing a chicken for his own use, though he does it now and then to have an old hen that has laid out her litter. And with a flock of sheep running in his pasture, he hardly knows the taste of mutton. Pork, potatoes, and Indian meal form the staples of his bill of fare. Where is his wife? You will find her in the kitchen, for she is as tireless a worker as her husband, lean, wrinkled, and sour-tempered. Where are the sons and daughters? All gone, for the young people do not linger around such a homestead. The daughters are teaching school, and the sons have salaried positions in the city. The old man, who started in life with nothing, is now financially independent. His unremitting toil and tenacity of purpose have brought him to the goal he sought, but he has never lived in the true sense of the term, never had any recreation, never known the joy of existence, and has deprived himself of the love and companionship of his children. Even in his vocation, he has kept aloof from its more attractive features, tree planting, or indeed anything to beautify his estate, unless it be perhaps white paint. He has never meddled with, and that most fascinating of all branches of agriculture, the scientific breeding of livestock, he has no knowledge. His life is pathetic, as is the life of every man who to the hardships and privations that fall unavoidably to his lot, add others that are needless of his own imposing. Is the picture overdrawn? Surely everyone who is at all familiar with the rural districts can testify to its faithfulness. The history of many an otherwise attractive old country homestead is marred by just such melancholy pictures. Pictures of lives that were barren and meager without cause, and in which there was a daily sacrifice of precious things to false gods. Now, that was exciting to me, but I'm not sure it is to you. Anyhow, what he's saying is they could have had a good life. They could have lived a little less strict and enjoyed each other and the bounty of the farm. And instead, Dad and Mom drove with an iron fist towards having money and got it, but lost all the other things that were important. And what that article points out, that picture of that old farmer and his wife who drove with an iron fist to get the money they wanted and left behind their children, left behind the fun, left behind the blessings, they missed out. They didn't even get to using the useful, nice things. They didn't even get there. All right? These all have their proper place. Okay? We use money to buy useful, nice things, to satisfy our needs, and to bless God. Thank God for those things, all right? We say thank you. And we don't know how long they're going to last. I just drove past the gas station this morning. What was the price of fuel? Anybody know? You guess?
$3.99.
$4.05. How long is it going to be that good? I don't know. All right? How long is it going to be that good? See, I'm a little bit of a... And I was thinking the worst possible scenario. That could be 8, you know, by the end of the summer. But I'm just saying, we need to be people who take advantage of the moment and look around us and enjoy what we have. And Ecclesiastes pulls that out. Sometimes I wonder too. I'm like, well, if I would be a wise person and I would help people out of a really bad situation, then they would probably remember that, wouldn't they? That would be really neat to be able to be that person who really helps people out because I invested a lot of thought into this certain one thing and it helped people. There's one in Ecclesiastes for that too. All right, let's go to verse 14. Ecclesiastes 9 and 14. Verse 13, let's start there. 12. Let's go to 12. All right. For man also knoweth not his time, as the fishes that are taken in an evil net, and as the birds that are caught in a snare, so are the sons of men snared in an evil time when it falleth suddenly upon them. All right? If you lived in Iran right now, and you were the wisest person in your neighborhood, and a bomb fell right close to you, what good would that have done you? Nothing. Same as us. Okay? Ecclesiastes doesn't pull back from that scenario. I mean, that's one of the things that runs through my mind. Like, there are wise people over there. I'm sure there are. There's Christians in Iran. And they are suffering under war. Is it their fault? No, not even close. They aren't even in charge. And they're suffering. Verse 13, this wisdom have I seen also under the sun, and it seemed great unto me. There was a little city, and a few men within it, and there came a great king against it, and besieged it, and built great bulwarks against it. So, why do you have these little cities? Because they have money, all right? They can probably protect themselves, their food, their children, their cattle. They don't want to be raided and bombarded. So they make a city, and they put a wall around it, and they're inside there, and there's not very many guys here, and this giant, this king with a huge army comes, and he's going to, like, take all their stuff. Verse 15, now there was found in it a poor wise man, and he by his wisdom delivered the city, yet no man remembered that same poor man. Then said I, wisdom is better than strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. Okay? There's almost no bad scenario that he doesn't cover, all right? People are like that. And that's okay. It's the world we live in, and Ecclesiastes doesn't pull back from it, and I'm grateful for that. We just have to remember that this is the way it is, all right? When the price of eggs was $8 a dozen, do you know how many people came and talked to me about chickens and eggs and all these sorts of things? Everybody, all right? I was the chicken guy, all right? And you know how many people this year have come talk to me with the price of eggs at 89 cents on sale at Tops? With the right coupon, you get a dozen eggs. I get questions, but it's more like pet chickens, not everybody start a business, all right? They're not providing for their family. As soon as that, and that's happened multiple times. I've had multiple high eggs prices and down, high egg prices and down, and if you think you're going to make a living or a reputation off of being a wise guy in a tough time, don't hang your hat on that one, all right? That's not going to actually work. It's not going to actually work. So we're working in this chaos, aren't we? We know that war brings chaos completely outside our control. Anybody vote for the war in Iran? No, I didn't either. It's happened. I'm paying more for gas because somebody else made a decision that I didn't have anything to do with, all right? War, famine. Who was planning COVID? You guys got anybody planning COVID? Disease, all right? All these things, the chaos, we are not in control of that stuff. It's not our fault. We didn't do it, okay? So the order that we thought we had, which we do have in some senses here as a young person, it ain't out here. That's something I have to deal with. It's not something I did. I did not start a war. I did not plan for a famine. I did not start a disease. And yet, I can lose loved ones to disease. I got people in war. I can have to deal with depressions or inflation. None of that stuff is my fault. And one thing you will hear, at least I see on Facebook, is protect yourself from all these things. You can't. Okay? You actually can't protect yourself from all these things. There are things you can do to mitigate the process problem, but something else will catch you. It's like the lady that was very careful all her life, never did anything, never went on vacations, never went on a high ride, never did anything, and she slipped in a tub and broke her neck. Okay? Serves her right, I mean, really. You cannot stop yourself from experiencing these things. Ecclesiastes says that explicitly, out loud, and I'm saying it too. So what's the answer? What are we going to do about that? Where is the order coming from? There are several pieces to this.
God, we're not headed. Ecclesiastes points us to the next level yet. What's that one? That's when you're no longer an adult. There's the old person, a thin layer of old person, and there's two pieces here, old person, and there's very few old people here today, and finally, well, you won't be able to put a circle on it because it's just going. Eternity. All right? We don't want to live lives here that make us regret our lives when we're an old person. What regrets that you have from when you were younger? If you're young enough, you don't have any regrets because you aren't old enough to have them. I'll tell you one regret I have. I wish I would have used my time more effectively. When I was 21 years old, I spent too much time thinking. I should have spent more time working. Okay? I should have spent more time earning money, okay, to have the things I needed, okay, and land and things like that, all right? I wish I would have done some more time working. And now I regret that. What are you going to regret as an old person? What do you wish you had done? And the answer is you're going to wish you had tried, not ridiculously hard, but you wish you would have put your full effort into life. There's no problem with that. Remember your Creator now, in the days of your youth, before it gets to this place when you can't really do much anymore. Remember Him now.
Ecclesiastes tells you all the things that don't work, and it also tells you the one thing that does work. That does matter, okay? And he keeps saying that. I was going to say that a whole bunch more, and I didn't. Ecclesiastes tells you all the things you should not build your life around, and it tells you the one thing that you should build your life around. All right? Let's go down to verse 13. Ecclesiastes 12. Turn there. Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 10. And I will close here. And while you're turning there, I just want to say one more thing. Someday, the things you take for granted now will be your biggest losses. Health, joy, sunrises, peace, $4.05 gas. Right? Some of the things that you complain about now are things you're going to wish you had done. All right? So, Ecclesiastes tells you all the things that don't work and the one thing that matters. Verse 10, Ecclesiastes 12:10. The preacher sought it to find out acceptable words, and that which was written was upright, even words of truth. The words of the wise are as goads and as nails fastened by the masters of assemblies, which are given from one shepherd. And further, by these my son be admonished. Of making many books, or websites, there is no end, and much study is a weariness of the flesh. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God, keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Listen to that. Fear God, keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. We're working the other direction, all right? For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good and whether it be evil. And that's the end of Ecclesiastes. It's a little bit like building a foundation for your house. When you're digging in the rocks and the gravel, you have to remove a bunch of stuff before you get down to where you want to be. Now, today we don't put a lot of stuff, on bedrock, but it feels to me like he's advocating stripping these things away, building your house straight on the rock, on the fear of God. If you ever climb underneath the house and you're down here fixing pipes, or like me, the torch, torching the frozen pipes, all right? It isn't pretty down here. When you look at a foundation, you dig a foundation, nobody's like, oh, I can't wait to dig another foundation. This is awesome, all right? Nobody does that. But you sure want somebody to have done it right. And you sure want somebody that knows how to build a foundation right down against what works. And that's why we have Ecclesiastes.
You shouldn't live down here. This is the crawl space. Don't live in Ecclesiastes, all right? But you sure want to know how to get through Ecclesiastes and make sure that foundation is put where it needs to be. And all the things, money and useful things, they do not fix a relationship with God, all right? That comes first. And then we say, thank you, Jesus. All right.
Let's pray. Father, thank you for the book of Ecclesiastes. I pray, Lord, that we would not repeat the experiment that Solomon ran here, that we would take his word for it, and that we would say, yes, the common and simple pleasures of life, the flowers that bloom, the smiles of a friend, the beauty of a sunrise, Lord, those are worth stopping and pausing and reflecting on and enjoying, because it'll never come again. And I pray that our hearts would be lifted up in gratitude to you, and we thank you for the foundation we have here of what actually matters and what actually is going to matter in the end. In Jesus' name, amen.